Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly muster together. And this week, I'm going to do much better with my part of the broadcast than I did last week. We had a little technical problem, which was completely your captain's fault, and since your captain admits to only one mistake a quarter, I have now occupied that one mistake for the quarter. This week, though, I have a brother icebreaker captain who is my friend that we're going to have a discussion in a few minutes. But Bruce, let's make sure that you're on the board. So welcome to From the Captain's Chair.
Thank you, Captain. Great to be here.
Okay, I'm not seeing that I'm getting you on the board. So let's see if what we can do. Try it again.
Great to be here, Captain.
Nope. Let's take a look and let's see what we can do here. Try this mic right down here. What number is that?
Five.
Okay, speak into that one.
Is that working?
It is indeed. Let's use that one. Okay, so we have now solved quickly an electronic problem, and my friend today is Captain Bruce Toney, and we're going to talk icebreaker talk, and we're going to talk sailor talk, and we're going to talk Coast Guard talk in just a few minutes. But as always, the beginning, I begin with my greetings to the world. The greetings to the world from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other, and to all of the ships and aircraft. And because Captain Toney is a buoy tender captain many times over, in particular to all of the tenders that are at work all over the world maintaining the aids to navigation, which keep all of the rest of us safe, who I am not a wiki, and Captain Toney is, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And the binnacle list. Some good news with one of the occupants of the binnacle list that I reported last week, someone particularly close to me and my road family. We've had some good reports from some of the testing that is going on, but there's still a cancer at work, and we are conscious of that, sensitive to that, and are confident that that presence on the binnacle list is and that Jeff is going to follow the instructions that he is being given by his medical team. And for all of Captain Joe's people all over the world who are on the binnacle list, it is my hope and my wish and my command from the captain's chair that you follow the instructions of your medical provider so that you leave the binnacle list in the way that we want and not the way that sometimes it happens. So, Captain Toney, I'm delighted to have you here. And so I'd like you to start off by introducing yourself and by listing the names and the home ports of all of the cutters that you commanded.
Well, thank you, Captain Joe. It's great to be here. I commanded, I had two command tours. One was the Ironwood, a seagoing buoy tender out of Kodiak, Alaska. And it was a three-year tour. And my other command tour as such was the cutter Polar Sea. But during that time, there was an opportunity to trade with the captain of the Polar Star. And so I went over there for a trip, came back, traded back, and did another trip on the Polar Sea. So three different ships as such in 6 different years in command tours.
So besides your command tour in Ironwood, and Ironwood is an interesting ship. I first knew Ironwood when she was home ported in Honolulu at Bay Sand Island.
Yes.
And there were 6 of them stationed there at the time, and they on a rotation going all the way out to the far reaches of the Pacific. But when you when you were her captain, where was she home ported?
We were home ported in Kodiak, and our primary area of operations was the Aleutian Islands and Bering Sea. So we would take off from Kodiak, but it was a couple days to our primary work area before we even got started.
So all I don't need to remind all of the Alaska hands who are Captain Joe's people and who listen to me from the captain's chair how bad the weather can be in the Alaska waters. There was a story about Ironwood when she was working out in the Western Pacific when she got into a typhoon and got herself rolled over onto her beam ends. And so this brings me to the opportunity to give you the opportunity to talk about the seaworthiness of those little ships.
Well, they were amazing ships. If I remember right, I think there were 36 of them built during the war.
Yes, that's right.
Something like that. Ironwood, I think, was specifically built at Coast Guard Yard, kind of as an experimental structure. But tremendously. I know when I first got to my orders as captain, I was very worried about the stability and studied the books and all the things to not do. But then it kind of struck me that, hey, these have been going for 40-some years in all kinds of weather all over the world. No one's tipped one over as such yet. I doubt I'll be the guy. But you still keep it in the back of your mind. You're still constantly worried about loading and just how you approach the seas and how you approach each mission. But they were amazing ships. It was sad to see them go. But fortunately, Ironwood actually still lives on down in Astoria at the Oregon Job Corps.
Mm.
So there's still an opportunity to see a 180 actually getting underway and sailing.
So do they get her underway?
They did up till at least a couple, 3 years ago. I had an opportunity to actually sail with them. They invited a bunch of the old Ironwood crew, and so I had a chance to go out off Astoria for the classic 2 or 3 hour cruise.
So did you take a look at the cross curves of stability? You said that you had looked at all the books. Did you look at the cross curves?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, you're always always worried about them. Of course, those of us that rode on 180s know they rode a lot like the icebreakers. They were the same, almost round bottom and quite rolly. We did have bilge keels, which helped a little bit, which, of course, the icebreakers didn't. But it was not uncommon on a bad night to have those 45-degree rolls. And if you've got a deck load with a bunch of buoys and sinkers strapped down with chained down, and if one of those gets loose or even just starts working loose, it can be an exciting and concerning time.
You are striking a responsive chord with all of the 180 sailors who are Captain Joe's people, and there are lots of them who are listening to us today or who will listen to this broadcast as it gets archived. So my guess is I never looked at the cross curves for a 180 because it's the only type of Coast Guard cutter along with Eagle that I did not command in my career. So I never looked at the cross curves myself, but my guess is that she had a positive riding arm all the way over till she was lying on her beam end so that she would come back up.
Virtually. It's been so long, I can't recall exactly, but at least 70 degrees.
Yeah.
Never had to test that, fortunately.
So I was under Polar Star last week, and I broadcast from there, and that's why we did not get my wonderful questions and remarks completely recorded. But I got the answers to my questions, and I was really impressed with the crew all the way from a fireman all the way up to her newly relieving commanding officer. And I'd like your impression of when in your command time in the two polars, I'd like your impression of in particular, the young people that you commanded, because I've talked a lot on this broadcast about the young people that I commanded. And I have this, and I had this feeling that maybe the changes in the service over the years. And you are a number of years junior to me at the academy, and the captain in Polar Star today is somewhat junior to you. And so over those years, there have been a lot of changes. This is, by the way, my 70th anniversary of my going to the starting in the academy. And so I've had this impression But that impression was to some extent removed by talking to the people, the crew in Polar Star. And I'd like your impression of the ones that you commanded, because you have an extensive command experience and XO experience. And so have at it. This is your chance.
Well, I think that most of us that have gone to sea, particularly for many years, find that the real joy a lot of is in your shipmates and learning about them and being able to teach them and bring them up behind you and all. And just getting to know them, and it becomes almost it is a family. I mean, that word shipmate is a very strong word. And to see the young folks come aboard and then see the development, to sometimes see that almost like the light bulb coming on as you see them going down the passageway, and you realize, oh my gosh, he or she gets it now. Mm-hmm. And is really somebody you can rely on. And to see sometimes how young and what you would think inexperienced that person is, but realize what an important position they're in, whether it's on a damage control team or an aircraft tie-down team or whatever, and realize, my gosh, that person's leading a whole bunch of people, and they're 19 years old or 20 years old, and they're in charge. There is just no doubt that person's it's got it. And it was just, I don't know, it's probably the most fulfilling thing in the job later, is to see the people develop and grow in their positions.
I agree with everything that you've said. And I am happy to report that maybe my impressions that the societal changes that have happened since I started at the Academy in 1952, that's what it is, sailors, 1952 to where we are today, that some of those societal changes may have altered also the collective personality of the youth of today. But there's something about a Pacific typhoon. There is something about breaking into McMurdo in 18 to 20 foot ice. There is something about hitting a really bad storm near Macquarie Island. All of those things I have done. And it's something about each of those events which brings home to even the youngest sailor that his survival depends on his being a part of something much bigger than himself. And I think that just from your remarks, you have ratified that. And because I just came away from my experience down under Polar Star feeling, first of all, that I had been inducted. Now, they may not feel this way, but I had been inducted to some extent into ship's company. I want to ask you about this, I like to get people like you, of like mind, like myself, and who've done many of the same things, and who are going to say things with which I agree. But I want to ask you about your experience with deployments in families. And I'd like you to address two parts of the world. First of all, your Alaska experience, both as XO and captain, because you were XO in, what, one or two tenders?
One tender in North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
XO of a 140 icebreaker on the Great Lakes.
Okay. All right. So so I'd like you to talk about effects on families when you were captain in Ironwood and then when you were captain in Polar Sea.
Well, it's obviously very difficult to leave your family behind, and it's certainly difficult for them. A lot of times what you're doing is basically asking your spouse to be a single parent, whether it be for 2 weeks, 2 months, clear up to 6 months on the polars. A lot of times, of course, in the Coast Guard, you're assigned somewhere that's not near other family. So your spouse and family have to rely on the other spouses and families in the area, or just neighbors, whomever that might be, friends from the kids' schools, etc. But those families are really dedicated to this as well, and have really had just as hard a time, if not harder, in a lot of respects, than those of us out bouncing around on the sea.
So I hope to put together a program possibly when Poa Star is back here from Vallejo, and when she's in the short strokes of getting ready to deploy, to see if I can't get maybe your lovely lady wife might come on with me, and Poa Star, and then an enlisted wife is the way that I'm thinking about how I could put this together. Because I have a lot of people who are also Captain Joe's people, who are those who also waited while we deployed. And speaking of deployments, you are, tell me what class you are at the academy.
83, sir. 83.
And when you graduated the academy, what was the first ship that you went to out of the academy?
I went to the Cutter Woodrush, which is another seagoing buoy tender, up in Sitka, Alaska, which was just an unbelievable first tour for a J.O. You're up there where there's a lot of narrow channels, high currents, bad weather on occasion. But to get to operate and do AIDS navigation, where you're picking up buoys right up next to the rocks in the current and all, a lot of ship handling opportunities and just a lot of great shipmates, and just to see some beautiful country and experience a really great place.
Did you have a captain who was a believer in hands-on ship handling?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, we both of my captains were allowed us to, you know, got the JOs heavily involved. My first captain, we had the ships had been converted not too many years before with a bow thruster, which helped quite a bit with when, because you've just got a big single screw for control. And so that helped. But he was a big believer in not using it. So we, as junior officers, we were not allowed to use the bow thruster. It could only be him. And so that forced us to kind of learn the older, harder way in a lot of times, but to not rely on that. So really, really helped with the ship handling, which translated to the little 140 icebreaker in the Great Lakes, same type of a setup, single screw with a big rudder. And I know when I first reported aboard there, and the first time I had an opportunity to handle the ship, a couple guys on the bridge looked around and go, wow, how's a young guy like that know that kind of thing? So
The 140s are particularly dear to me because the lead ship in the class, Katmai Bay, Hull number 101, was one of my group units when I was the group commander in the Sioux. And her first captain was Dick White. And Dick had been my ops boss in Northwind in the Antarctic. And her chief of the boat was Master Chief Bosun's mate, Mike Calhoun. And Mike had been a very unpromising seaman with me in Vietnam, in Ingham, in Vietnam. And his dad was the first Master Chief of the Coast Guard, Charlie Calhoun. So you can see how we are all of us interlocked together.
We're all interlocked.
And especially if you are in the polar side of the community, because there are not really very many of us. And especially there are not very many of us who are qualified to break deep ice in the hard ice in Antarctica in particular. So when you retired, and I talk a little bit on this program about retirement because I retired very badly, and that's another story or stories for another time. But when you retired, I happen to know that you hold an unlimited master's license, any oceans, any tonnage, and you did not sail on that license. And you told me a little bit, and I'd like you to tell that story here because I always want people who retire to have some sort of a plan. I had no plan except to get on the outside of as much of the product of the Johnny Walker distillery as I could manage. And I really succeeded at that. And, of course, I got very sick. But those are other stories for other time. So tell me about your retirement and what happened.
Well, I had worked for the license and had achieved it, and thought that I would work somehow in the transportation industry, whether it was as a sailing captain or mate, or whether possibly in an office type logistics job. But I retired in 2010, and 2009 I was looking for jobs, which was right in the heart of the big recession, and the transportation industry was just really slowed down, and there just weren't, nothing was coming up. And so I happened to be at a friend's retirement, and another friend there, a classmate, handed me a business card from his company. He worked for a company that does multifamily communities, apartments. And one thing led to another. I applied and got a job and ran the maintenance for the Pacific Northwest for a large apartment company. By the time I retired, we had almost 6,000 units of housing. It was an interesting job. I had a lot of maintenance staff in six different pay grades wearing dark blue t-shirts. It looked a lot like the Coast Guard. In some respects, I was kind of like a port engineer for the buildings. I was trying to keep the water out of the top instead of the bottom, like you would on a ship. So
because you are a not only a blue water sailor but a Great Lakes sailor, like I am both. The book this week is called End of an Era: The Last of the Great Lakes Steamboats, and it was a gift from John, who J-O-N John, and his son Cody, who are both Captain Joe's people and stalwarts of the Coast Guard Channel. And it is a book that if you are interested in getting it, you're probably going to have a hard time finding it. But it is a wonderful book about the last of the steamers on the Great Lakes and the ore boats. And I commend it to you. Again, it's called End of an Era: The Last of the Great Lakes Steamboats. It's by David Plowden, Plowden. And the magazine this week is Power Ships. And Power Ships this time has a article in particular that the cover of Power Ships for this particular issue is called To Vietnam on a Carrier. And those of us who are Vietnam sailors would be interested in that. But in particular, I'm referring to a little clip that is in it, which says, cruise ships return to Key West despite the ban. And some cruise ships are now going into Key West for letting people roam around. And it is my hope and my wish, although I do not command any cruise ships, that they also visit the Coast Guard cutter Ingham. Which leads me to the news that the next Ingham is under construction at Eastern Shipbuilding. Did you sail in any HEC when you were during your sailing time?
I had two HEC cadet cruises.
Okay.
But that was it.
What ships did you sail in cadet cruises?
I had the Hamilton, which was, of course, the first of the 378s, the mm-hmm. only one with a wheel, as opposed.
Yes, that's right.
And that was just a five-week Caribbean-based cadet cruise. But I got to do a 90-day ALPAT on the cutter Morgenthau in 1982, what was known as our first-class cruise. And that was really a cruise that shaped my future. It's where I kind of discovered Alaska, and some of the deck officers told me some hints about things up there. And then the captain that I sailed for was just phenomenal, and someone who I actually kind of used as someone to emulate in mm-hmm. the rest
who,
of my
who was that?
It was Captain Jack Goldthorpe.
Oh, yes. Yes, I knew him well. Knew yeah. him well. You, in fact, you can't name a captain that either I knew well or was worked for me or I worked for at some time in my career, in my seagoing career. I knew Jack very well. So, and you're right. He was a highly regarded, wonderful service reputation in the Coast Guard.
Yep. I still owe him many things for how he just, again, inspired me mm-hmm. and some things that I saw him do that I tried to emulate later on as to be a good leader.
So you used the expression which I use too, and that is that we owe a debt to those who came before us and who saw some glimmer of hope and talent in us, that we were worth saving from our own indiscretions, in my case, those indiscretions were many. And so I also am very, very fortunate. I keep saying over and over again that I am the most fortunate of men. And partly because I do owe a debt to many, many people. And a couple of them were flag officers who saw in me something that was worth keeping, even though I was somewhat unconventional. I used to use the word Uno Deer frequently. The word Uno Deer means unless otherwise directed. And I would send that to my superiors frequently. Uno Deer, I'm going to come home by way of the Suez Canal instead of, well, that one I got back down on, but I tried it out. And the signal that I got back was, well, Captain Joe, good try. But no, you're going to come back the way the op order says you're going to come back. In the Great Lakes, I worked for a wonderful Italian admiral by the name of Tony Figuero. And Admiral Figuero was another one of those who realized that I was running Group Sioux the way that he wanted it run. And one of the things that he did was that he kept his staff away from me. So I am very grateful to a number of flag officers, and I'm very grateful as well to some chief petty officers because I was raised by chiefs.
Sure.
Would you comment on that?
Well, very much. I would say that probably my biggest influences were the first three warrant officers that I worked with.
Good call. Good call.
On the
buoy
tender, I had a warrant bosun and a warrant engineer, Frank Abel and Tom Atwood. They were just phenomenal, and they did that same thing. They must have seen some glimmer because they took me under their wing, where with some of the other JOs, they didn't necessarily, and mm-hmm. brought me along. After that 2 years, I transferred to the Great Lakes, and the warrant engineer on there, Dave Power, was my roommate on the 140, but also he was that experienced guy who just helped set me up with so many different good things in life. Those three are at the top of the list, but yes, certainly many, many chiefs out there. One chief in particular I want to mention, actually senior chief at the time, but served with me on both polars, Russ Coons,
mm-hmm.
Lives up in this area, but just a phenomenal ability to figure things out, and one of the hardest work ethics of anybody I ever sailed with, and just a great shipmate.
So, Captain, we come far too quickly to our time. I will extend right now an invitation for you to come back sometime in the future, and we will do another broadcast like this because there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to talk about and like to talk about with you. We talked briefly about Ingham, and I am mentioning here that the next Ingham is under construction at Eastern Shipbuilding, and the head of the Ingham Association was able to go to that ceremony. And I plan to be around for her christening and for her commissioning. I think that she is going to, she looks to be a very workmanlike ship, and I think she's going to turn out to be a great successor to my Ingham. The new Ingham is going to have to earn her own battle stars. She's going to have to earn her own presidential unit citations. She's going to have to earn her own roster of people rescued, lives saved, missions fired, if it turns out that she goes into combat, as did my Ingham. But I intend to go down while she's still under construction. I have a piece of steel from my own Ingham, and I'm going to donate that to her and ask the ship superintendent to incorporate that into her hull structure. I think that that's good, Joss, for us to be able to do that. So, Captain, I have to thank you for being here. We'll do it again. And this is your Captain Joe. As always, we come too quickly to the end of our time together. And I am up in the captain's chair. I am, as always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, and I remain your Captain Joe from the captain's chair on station and watching properly. Each of you take care of those for whom you're responsible. Watch their six and carry on.